can turn your Bibles to Leviticus chapter 23. We'll be reading from Leviticus chapter 23. So if you would, cast your minds back, way back, as much as 2 weeks ago. That's not maybe not that far back. When Matt presented a lesson about fasting just a couple few days before we all planned to sit down and eat a massive meal for Thanksgiving, and I thought that that was just wonderful and funny and great, especially since I had planned on the Sunday morning after that Thanksgiving feast, presenting a lesson on Hebrew feasts. So I thought that that was going to be a really fun bookend to Thanksgiving, is a lesson on don't eat anything at all, and then ending with eat lots and lots and celebrate the Lord. Ironically, these feasts. What got in the way of that was a tremendous desire to never see food again due to the stomach bug that assailed my family. So now we're going to do a lesson on Hebrew feasts. The Old Testament law and the specifics and the ins and outs is not my specialty. I have a hard time when I'm reading through remembering, okay, where do I put what I just read with the previous pieces that I've read in times past. I feel a lot more comfortable with the prophets and some of the visions and the ideas. I feel like I've got a handle on that. So with this lesson, to get myself ready, I asked a friend of mine, Carl Ballard. He's preaching out in Pittsburgh. He loves the intricacies and the way I would describe it is the math behind, the categorize and, you know, how these things all line up. And when it's talking about this feast, it's talking about it again. It talked about it in these chapters. And as I'm reading through, I would not have noticed how it's describing new aspects of the same thing from before. So he helped me out with this to get some categories. And Leviticus chapter 23 is the chapter that is the chapter you want. It does not have all of the details, but it has the feasts. If you're blessed with chapter headings and you start looking down through it, you're going to see key feasts. And so this is the chapter that takes all the data and eliminates lots of the information, but just gives you a sense of here they all are, here are the things. And so I wanted to look at harvest festivals and harvest feasts, or the feasts that the Israelites celebrated that were connected to harvest, since it was Thanksgiving, and I thought that would be fun to study. Now, our lives are not connected with harvests the way most human beings, maybe even in the world presently, but definitely throughout all time, everyone was very much and intimately interacting with seed time and harvest. That phrase was just a part of who and what we are as human beings, but we are blessed with Thanksgiving. And if you are working in a cubicle, you still celebrate Thanksgiving. And you might not go out and harvest the food or have an interaction in that sense, but we have a holiday that's not religious at all, but totally grows out of a world of people who come from religion. I mean, when you think about the secular celebration of Thanksgiving, it is a non-religious feast that grows out of people who had a religious mindset. And it's just, we're thankful for what we have. That is a spiritual feeling. It's not a part of the Bible. The holiday isn't in the Bible. But every sentiment in Thanksgiving is a part of the Bible. And I think that that's just a really neat way that we can interact with the world and say, sure, that's not a Christian celebration, but boy, is it a Christian way of celebrating what God has given us. And I think that that's neat. The Hebrew festivals were closely connected with the harvests, and some were about the harvests itself. And so they would have these regular reminders. We've got the one at the end of the year, but they would have regular reminders that except the Lord build the house, those who labor over it labor in vain. And so they would have these reminders throughout the year. I think that they are valuable for us. So we're going to end up reading all of Leviticus chapter 23. I'm going to first read the first three verses and start looking at it in this way. Leviticus chapter 23, verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, these are the appointed feasts of the Lord that you shall proclaim as holy convocations. They are my appointed feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath day, is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work. It is a Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwelling places." The chapter begins off with the absolute basics, and I'm going to even begin with the basics. In verses 1 and 2, we start getting some words. These are my appointed feasts, and this is the holy convocations, and then he says Sabbath. And I just thought it's worth looking at these words. The appointed feasts, in Hebrew, that's a one word. This is the appointed time, the appointed place, the appointed meeting. It's like, it's not just a meeting, it's the appointed one. Holy convocation is two words, holy, and then convocation. And so then I had to look up what does convocation mean? It's an assembly of persons called together to a meeting. So the appointed feasts is the appointed meeting. The holy convocation is the holy meeting. And so it's a lot of synonyms here. And so these are ideas that are repeating themselves, and God himself is repeating himself. He's very redundant, and he says, these are the times that I am setting up that you are going to get together for the holy get-togethers. And then he talks about the Sabbath. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work. It is a Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwelling places. The chapter heading for my chapter here says feasts of the Lord. There's nothing in verse 3 about a feast. But we can get a sense here, especially how these things are going to carry through, that some of them are broad ideas. Maybe the Sabbath isn't a feast, but it is a solemn day of rest. When I was looking up the definition of the word, it's a very intensive form of the word rest, or stopping. This is a stopping of solemn rest. It's holy, it's a special thing. In a lot of ways, this is something that Carl turned me on to, and I think that this is a really good description. It's the prototypical, it's the shadow. All the feasts are, in some ways, a version of the Sabbath. The Sabbath is actually going to show up in all of them. When you do this feast, you're going to Sabbath on it. And so every week, they're doing the Sabbath. And whenever they do a feast, they Sabbath on it too. And sometimes they line up, and I think sometimes there's extras. It's the first day, right? Okay, day one, day two, day three. But it's the first day of note in the Bible. Back in Genesis chapter 2, God did his work, and on the seventh day he rested. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. And we don't, well, why? Because on 6 days God did work, and on the seventh day he rested. So he blessed it and made it holy. Well, why did... That's the reason. There's not a lot of information there. This is the way God operated and the way God set it up. It's the first celebrated day, as I'm calling it. And it shows up in the Ten Commandments. There are some laws before the Ten Commandments. There's definitely a lot of law that's not written down. People know what's right and wrong before the Ten Commandments show up. But the Sabbath is part of the Ten Commandments, which aren't necessarily more important, but there's a lot of weight there. And I think that this is really interesting. The Passover instructions were given before the Sabbath instructions were written in the Ten Commandments, but they're right there. I'm going to go ahead. I was trying to figure out, this was a hard PowerPoint to put together because I wanted lots of Bible references, but also symbols. So I'm just going to do it this way so that I can refer to these things. I'm just going to do a big seven, right? That's my Sabbath symbol, but I'm going to put Z's because it's resting. So this is the Sabbath rest. It's the big seven. It's there, so we can refer to it. It's just, I like symbols to represent things. We have this command in the Ten Commandments. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. I love that phrase. It is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. And we see that there is a direction there. The preposition is calling. The Sabbath is connected to the Lord. On it you shall not do any work. No one, not you, not anybody. You're not going to do that work. And that at the end of that passage in the Ten Commandments, in verse 11, is where we get the because. For on 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So, as I'm going through these feasts, I'm going to try to have a passage where, a part of the screen where I say, what is it? Where I try to describe what it is, and then why is it? I don't like oversimplifying things. Oh, this is why the Sabbath is. But with this lesson, I want to cover a whole lot of different feasts. So I am going to oversimplify things. And why did God make the Sabbath? All right, we can write books on that one. But God worked for 6 days, and he rested on the Sabbath, and he blessed that day, and so that's why we have it. It's for our rest. I don't know if it's because we get tired. We do get tired. It's a Sabbath to the Lord. I think it has more to do with because we get tired. We sleep every night because we are tired. There's something different. There's something about this rest idea. So as we continue to read through this chapter, let the idea of rest grow in your mind. It's not just laziness. It's not our nightly beauty sleep. It is a Sabbath to the Lord. All right, so now we're going to start reading in verse 4, and we're going to look at the Passover and the unleavened bread, starting in verse 4. These are the appointed feasts of the Lord, the holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at the time appointed for them. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at twilight, is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. For 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work, but you shall present a food offering to the Lord for 7 days. On the seventh day is a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. So we've already talked about the Sabbath. Now we're talking about, as he says here in verse 5, the Lord's Passover, and in the very next verse, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And the way you do both of those, there are some key instructions for sure, but you Sabbath both of them. Isn't that interesting? So the Sabbath is a part of these, or that Sabbath resting. The first is the Passover. What is the Passover? Well, it's the first one that we get regulations about. You can, I don't have the time, but take the time. Turn to Exodus chapter 12 if you'd like. I've got little passages on the screen. They get lots of instruction about how they're going to do the Passover that very first time. And this is the detail that then they're going to ride on throughout their time as the Lord's covenant people. You shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. Right there from the beginning, God is claiming possession of it in some way. I think that that's a really, that's always intrigued me. This is the Lord's Passover. You're going to do it. This is the Lord, or this is Yahweh's Passover. There's this special connection to it. So that's what it is, and you can read about how they're going to prepare the lamb the right way. I don't have the time to do that lesson. This is where you can make note of Exodus chapter 12 and read it for yourself. I'm interested. I might do a Passover lesson coming up, or a Day of Atonement lesson coming up. I don't have the time to describe those things in this lesson. So take the time and read it on your own. It's really interesting things. Why is there the Passover? The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. God is punishing and plaguing the Egyptians, and he is going to pass over the Israelites so that they can survive. And so we have the door and the lintel and the doorknob, so that you know we're looking at a door here, and there is blood above the door, and that's the Passover. The Passover is a feast that is celebrating the concept of God is going to pass over. There's going to be no destruction. So this is a deliverance from slavery as well as a deliverance from death, all wrapped up together. Jesus died on Passover. He's our Passover lamb. I don't have the time to do that lesson. You know, like there are too many lessons that are going on with all this. And so that's what he talks about in chapter 23, verse 5. All that's kind of wrapped up in verse 5. On the first of the month, on the 14th day of the month at twilight, is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month, the very next day, is the feast of unleavened bread to the Lord. For 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall make, you know, not do any normal work. So the very next day, but it's also kind of part of that first day. There's distinction here, but there's also a lot of unity. They have the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Remember, they're eating in haste. You don't have time to let the bread raise. It's going to be unleavened. And so they continue to then celebrate that way, and they eat bread without leaven. It starts that day after the Passover. And there's the instruction there, again in Exodus 12, about how they're going to have their bread ready, and they're going to have their belts all ready, and they're going to be scooting out of town really fast. And so then the Israelites continue. Here we have in Leviticus 23, they are going to continue to eat this this unleavened bread. In Luke 22, verse 1, Luke says, "Now the feast of unleavened bread drew near, which is called the Passover." So already we see in Leviticus, they're in the same, as if Moses was writing paragraphs. They're writing the same paragraph, and they're right there together. It's two separate days, but they're kind of united as the same day, because Passover is starting that evening. It's kind of interesting. And when Luke is writing it, he's writing it as if it's just the one thing. And so that's why I'm talking about them on the same screen here. In a lot of ways, it's not the same feast, but it's kind of the same feast. They're done together. They originally happened together. Why is the Feast of Unleavened Bread? What is it about? It's about that they were delivered. So was Passover. So you can see how they're well connected. But continuing there in Exodus 12, if you're there, in verse 17, "You shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on this very day I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt." So the Passover is their deliverance. The Feast of Unleavened Bread is their deliverance. They're very tightly connected. And we can see that in Leviticus 23, where we're reading from tonight, in 4 through 8, they're very tightly connected to each other. Now, I've kind of got it blocked out in dark letters. The next feast is the first fruits. And I wanted them together. You celebrate the Passover by this Sabbath rest of not doing any work. You celebrate the unleavened bread by this Passover of not doing any work. Sorry, by the Sabbath of not doing any work. The only feast in this chapter that doesn't say you shall not do any work is this one called first fruits, and it's kind of wrapped up in the previous two together, and so that's why I think it doesn't mention not doing work. So back in Leviticus 23, verse 9. Oh, I meant to draw some first fruits, unleavened bread. This is, if you guys are trying to figure out how do you draw symbols for things, right? What does unleavened bread look like? This is the easiest. Flat, there, unleavened bread. Maybe that looks like a round loaf. That's supposed to be like, it's a flat piece of bread. All right, there we go. I love symbols. So nice and easy. So we've got the Passover, and we've got the unleavened bread, and now in verse 9, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel and say unto them, when you come into the land that I give you and reap its harvests," I'm going to stop right there. Are they going to celebrate this while they're wandering in the wilderness? But they're getting the law about it. When they get into the land, they'll be doing this over and over and over again. All right? "When you come into the land that I give you and reap its harvest, you shall bring the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. And he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord so that you may be accepted. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. And on the day when you wave the sheaf, you shall offer a male lamb, a year old, without blemish, as a burnt offering to the Lord. And the grain offering with it shall be 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil, a food offering to the Lord with a pleasing aroma, and a drink offering with it shall be of wine, 1/4 of a hin. And you shall eat neither bread nor grain, parched or fresh, until this same day, until you have brought the offering of your God. It is a statute forever throughout your generations and all your dwellings. Now, it never mentioned that Sabbath resting concept there, and I think it's because it's tied with these other two. So what is this first fruits? When you get to the land, and when the land starts blessing you, you're going to bring me the first. That's what this is. When is it? Well, part of the when is when you're in the land. But like, when in the year and what's the time? This is a weird one. When do you celebrate it? On the day after the Sabbath. There's like that. There's 52 of those a year. It's in the context of the Passover. Passover is on the 14th. The unleavened bread is on the 15th. And then the day after that, you would do it on that next day. And so this first fruit celebration would be that next day. So it's very much connected with them. And so we have this. Oh, and the why? Why is it? There's not a lot of information here about the first fruits idea, but in Exodus 13, remember we were looking at Exodus 12 with all the Passover and all the unleavened bread instructions? The Passover, God was going to pass over the Israelites and not kill the firstborn. And so in chapter 13, there's all this instruction about how God says, the firstborn belongs to me. So there's a connection there. All that opened the womb are mine, of your male and your livestock, the firstborn, the cow, and the sheep. I'm just going to do a number one for firstborn. First fruits. That's my symbol. So we have the Sabbath, and then we have these three that are connected together. They're connected in verses, very much timed up. They're connected by days. I feel like when I am reading through this first fruits, when it says the next day after the Sabbath, that doesn't feel very specific. But when we move on to the next one in verse 15, there's a very specific month and a day. And when we move on to the next one in verse 23, there's a very specific month and a day. So I think the idea is as you're reading through, you can see how this is this first fruits is connected back to that other day. This is where Dan has a hard time in the law. It's very specific and very tricky. And it just takes me a long time to group these things together. Take your time and read through the chapter a few times. If you think, oh, I think it might have been with another day, I'm happy to talk about that. But we have a unit here. Passover, unleavened bread, and first fruits. Okay. First fruits would imply also harvest. You're beginning to harvest. So this whole celebration is connected to a harvest festival. All right. Let's see if I can speed this up. I'm sorry. Verse 15. Here is a new one. You shall count 7 full weeks from the day after the Sabbath, from the day after you brought the sheaf of the wave offering. You shall count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. Then you shall present grain offering of new grain to the Lord. You shall bring from your dwelling places 2 loaves. And for the sake of time, I'm not going to read all those details of the different things that you are going to bring. Verse 20. And the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before the Lord with the 2 lambs. They shall be holy to the Lord for the priest, and you shall make a holy proclamation on that day. You shall hold a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. It is a statute forever in all your dwelling places throughout all your generations. So what we have here is this feast of weeks. You're going to count out these weeks. You might recognize this as Pentecost, as we see in Acts chapter 2. Pentecost is a Greek, you know, it's a new word talking about it. But you're going to count out these 7 full weeks. 15 and 16 is a little bit redundant. It repeats itself. Count out the 7 full weeks or count out the 50 days. And so you have this next time. And so what we have right here is a unit of Passover, unleavened bread, and then the first fruits. And then we have something that's 50 days later. It's a separate time altogether, although it's, you know, somewhat connected. And this is this time when they are offering other things. Why does this one exist? Well, in some of the passages, like in Exodus and in Numbers, it's called the Feast of Harvest, or it's called the Day of First Fruits, which is the Feast of Weeks. And so there was the special first fruits giving here. But there's another sense where this is also the beginning of getting a lot of things. And so I liken it to, there's strawberry season, but the season hasn't really kicked into gear yet. And I think of this one as like really summer's getting into full gear and you're starting to get your tomatoes, you're starting to get the harvest coming in more in a full way. So that's what it's about. There's not a lot of information about, you know, the great spiritual significance. One thing that Carl pointed out to me is that 50 is connected to the law. It looks like, and I haven't done the math, but those of you who like Bible math, in Exodus chapters 13 through 19, they're leaving, right? They have exited, and it looks like about Pentecost days later is when they get the law at Mount Sinai. That's really cool to me. I haven't done the math. That's another homework assignment for you. So there maybe 50 is connected with the giving of the law. Of course, that does show up in the New Testament. What happened on Pentecost is when the Holy Spirit falls on the apostles and they start giving this new covenant law. So I think this is a nice, easy one. You can read through it. We get a little quick understanding. And then we get verse 22 out of nowhere. And when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to the edge, nor shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and the sojourner. I am the Lord your God. Right in the middle of all these feasts, we get harvest gleaning instructions. God is telling us how we need to be and feel, even as he's telling us how to show up to church. How are you going to worship me, God says. And he stops the discussion and says, you leave for the poor. I just find that really compelling. We're going to live as God lives, but we're also going to give as God gives. And I still like that statement. We need to give as God gives. But good grief, it's totally impossible. If we're leaving the corners of our field for the poor as God wants us to do, are we giving the way God gives? He gave us the field. And we're giving some extra on the side. I still like the statement, we need to live as God lives and give as God gives, but the reality is we'll never be able to give as much as God has given. But I think it's so interesting as we're reading through these feasts, God puts the brakes on it and says, guys, be good, love your neighbor as yourself. All right, now we're going to look at the last section, starting in verse 23. Trumpets, atonement, and booths. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall observe a solemn rest, a memorial proclaimed with a blast of trumpets, a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. You shall present a food offering to the Lord. There is almost no information here. It's just, you're going to get a trumpet, and you're going to blast it, and you're also going to Sabbath rest on that day. I think that this one's really interesting. What is it? It's the seventh month, and I'm wondering if this is the Sabbath month, right? You could call it that. And well, why does it exist? Why is this Feast of Trumpets? I don't know, other than we're proclaiming this is the Sabbath month. We're proclaiming this great and important month. There's not very much on this day, but this is another day of rest. And then we can continue with verse 26, the Day of Atonement. This is a big day. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, now on the 10th day of this seventh month is the Day of Atonement. It shall be for you a time of holy convocation, and you shall afflict yourselves, or humble yourselves, or fast, and present a food offering to the Lord, and you shall not do any work on that very day, for it is a day of atonement to make atonement for you before the Lord your God. For whoever is not afflicted on that day shall be cut off from his people. And whoever does any work on that very day, that person I will destroy from among his people. You shall not do any work. It is a statute forever throughout all your generations in your dwelling places. It shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict yourselves. On the ninth day of the month, beginning at the evening, from the evening to evening, you shall keep your Sabbath. So the word Sabbath shows up there a whole bunch of times. There is not that much information here on the Day of Atonement. We can read elsewhere on the Day of Atonement. That's another homework assignment. But we see here, this is another celebration. It's in this seventh month. I don't know how to do a symbol for the Day of Atonement, except that the high priest, who's got his thing and his turban, and And he's going to go into the Holy of Holies. That's my symbol for the Day of Atonement. But they've blasted the trumpets, and then a few days later, the high priest is going to perform the rites of the Day of Atonement, and you will not work. Like, well, we know. You've already called this a set. Like, you will not. He doubles down on that there. This is serious. As if it wasn't serious before. I think it's really compelling how serious God makes it. Why is the Day of Atonement? Leviticus 16. For on this day atonement shall be made for you to cleanse you. You shall be clean before the Lord from all your sins. Atonement may be made for the people of Israel once in the year because of all their sins. This is to make the people clean. Now, it's not a feast. In fact, you're going to afflict yourself. You're going to fast on this one. All right, but now in verse 33, the Feast of Booths, the next one. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel, saying, on the 15th day of this seventh month, you see how they're all grouped together, on the 15th day of this seventh month, and for 7 days, is the Feast of Booths, or tabernacles, up to the Lord. On the first day shall be a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. For 7 days you shall present food offerings to the Lord. On the 8th day you shall hold a holy convocation and present food offerings to the Lord. It is a solemn assembly. You shall not do any ordinary work. Verses 37 and 38 is a reminder about the ideas of holy convocations. I'm going to jump down to 39, again back to the booths. On the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the produce of the land, you shall celebrate the feast of the Lord 7 days. On the first day shall be a solemn rest, and on the 8th day shall be a solemn rest. And you shall take, on the first day the fruit of splendid trees, branches of palm trees, and boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. You shall celebrate it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. It is a statute forever throughout all your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall dwell in booths, or tabernacles, for 7 days. All native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the people of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Thus Moses declared to the people of Israel the appointed feasts of the Lord. And so now we have the feast of staying in tents. All right, so there we go. And we have these, really it's three sets of feasts, and I've included the Sabbath on the left. It's like the fourth, but it's all year round, right? The Sabbath is happening all year long, and the Sabbath is happening in each of these festivals themselves. And so we have three here together, and then you would count the 50 days to have this one here, and then you have three here together. Now clearly the Day of Atonement is, in Dan's opinion, I don't know if I can say that God thinks so, the Day of the Atonement is the most important of these three. On this one, you blow trumpets. On this one, you're living in tents and remembering. If the Day of Atonement feels heavier. I don't know if that's the truth, though. And the Passover seems to me the most significant in its connection with Christ. And yet, the unleavened bread is one way that we still commemorate Jesus' death. And Jesus was raised on the Sunday, and it kind of seems like this day when they would be waving the offering of the first fruits, and Jesus is the first of God. There's just lots of really neat connections. But we have three categories here. The Feast of Booths is so that they would know how God delivered the people, and he had them live in tents. I think that that's kind of an interesting one. When I saved the people and they lived in tents. And so I don't know, is the significance of the Feast of Tents that God saved and delivered? Or is it that God sustained them while they were in their tents? Because we do have those passages about how your sandals never wore out, and your clothes never wore out, and those sorts of things. And maybe it signifies both. A reminder that God delivered and then for 40 years kept delivering them. So there are times, and we've talked about this, there were three times a year that the Israelites needed to gather together. And there are, ironically, three passages in the Bible that say that. Exodus 23, Exodus 34, and Deuteronomy 16. three times in the Old Testament that God says, you're going to gather three times. And these are those three times. There were many other types of sacrifices. There were many other types of offerings. When your firstborn was born, you would have a particular offering to do. But then there are some other first sacrifices and festivals that they would do. So there are three gatherings, and each of them are connected with harvests. So the harvest of first fruits, right here at the beginning, connected to the Passover time. And one of the study Bible notes I was reading, it talked about this is when the barley harvest is beginning, the wheat's starting to come out. So it's a very, very early harvest, and they're beginning to celebrate, look at what God has given us. Don't eat any of this until you've given your first to the Lord, is one of the instructions there. And then 50 days later, you get the Feast of the Weeks. The wheat harvest has begun. It's coming into ear. Right here, the wheat is beginning. You can't harvest it yet, but it's beginning to be harvested right here at this, at just the normal time of the year in the cycle. The grapes are beginning to ripen. The almonds are ripe and ready for picking, and so there's more that's going on. And then the Feast of Booths, right here, you don't eat on the Day of Atonement, right? You don't eat much then, but you do eat a few days later, because this is the time, maybe we would think about this one as like, this one's like Thanksgiving. You have gathered in all the food. Some verses call it the Feast of Ingathering. And I think that might have been on the slide previous. That this, you've gathered in. And so in a lot of ways, Thanksgiving is to us is maybe similar to this Feast of Booths. It's the end of the harvest. In fact, they're going to get ready to plow for the new year pretty soon. And these harvests, you know, well, we don't live that way. I don't live that way. Some people still live that way today, and God bless them. I'm glad that we have food, and they have a connection to these stories and these things in a way that's maybe better than do I. But there are ways that we can interact with it today. I mean, think of the Bishop blueberries. Now, strawberries are coming in a little bit earlier than that, but there's a sense of it's all beginning. You know, maybe they should rip them all up and start doing strawberries so it'll work with the sermon better. But, you know, the blueberries that are coming in around June or so, that's not early spring. But you get that sense there. The thing, it's beginning to come in. And then when the blackberries are coming in, right, I think of that, the busyness of summer. This is when, wow, lots of stuff is coming in. It's not that first tomato. It's like now I have to figure out what am I going to do with all these tomatoes. And it's really picking up. I have this, I don't know if I can make one-to-one blueberries, and then 50 days later, blackberries. But I have that sense in my mind. And then by the time you get to the Feast of Booths, you get to the bishops when they have the infinite butternut squash, and you don't know what to do with it anymore. And it's the end. Everything has been done, and you've gathered it all in, and there's this overabundance. And it's we can live that way. We don't have to go out and, you know, plant a whole bunch, but we can still operate that way. We live in an agrarian community, and you can spend the year. You can go out in early season and see what's happening, in the mid-season when things are picking up, and at the end of the season. And that's the way the Israelites would have been working in and out. If you were a carpenter, you still would have been around this. And so if you're a carpenter today, you can still go out and interact in it that way. I just think that this is neat that we can get the chance to interact with. The Passover is, to me, the big event, but the first fruits, right? That festival, that harvest time, you're thinking that our lives are spared. Maybe you're thinking we've made it through the winter, you know, and we have been redeemed by God, our firstborn. We have spring rebirth. Those are some of the images that pop into my mind. Then during the Festival of Weeks, or the Pentecost Festival, you have this, the beginning of the beginning of the busyness of summer, and the harvest is really starting to kick in, and you can be thankful for what God has given. And then at the end of the season, when you get to Thanksgiving, you can just celebrate Thanksgiving. Thank you for the harvest and all that we have had, and you're putting up for supply for the winter, and you're going to make it through. You're thankful to God for his provision of food. You're thankful to God because he has made you free from your slavery, whatever it is, right? Freedom from slavery from sin. The Israelites would be freedom from slavery in Egypt. Thank you for the provision that God has provided. We're going to make it through the wilderness. We will make it through the hard winter months. We are here still pilgrims, exiled in this land, and God is going to sustain us just the same way that God sustained the Israelites. I think it's really important. The three times a year that the people would gather, and maybe the harvest wasn't the most important part every time, but they were connected with harvests, and I think that that's really neat. Each feast was tied back to the fact that God provided. And each one of these feasts was intimately tied with the Sabbath rest. Because we're tired? I don't think that that's it. I think it's because we're supposed to stop and think about God. That's just what I keep coming to. So this is a long lesson. So I won't read all of this. But our closing psalm is Hebrews 4. Hebrews 4 is talking about the Sabbath rest. Some people say that, Sunday is the Christian Sabbath. That's a neat phrase or a neat idea. I think Hebrews 4 is talking about what is indeed the actual Christian Sabbath. I'll start in verse 6. Take the time to read 1 through 13 on your own today, though. Since, therefore, it remains for some to enter it, the rest, verse 5. Since, therefore, it remains for some to enter it, and those who formerly received the good news failed to enter because of disobedience, again, he appoints a certain day today, saying through David so long afterwards in the words already quoted, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works, as God did from his. Let us therefore strive to enter that rest. He's not talking about every Saturday, though I think that that is a good rest to think about. And I don't think he's talking about every Lord's Day, though the Lord's Day is an important rest to think about. The rest that we are trying to enter isn't the weekend. Unless you want to consider heaven the eternal weekend. Whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. That's what this is about. That we have received from God and we celebrate and thank God by giving back the first. And we do it by resting once a week. We can do it figuratively or literally as Christians. They had a law in the Old Testament. And we do it by remembering what the Lord has done for us. We can do it just in our own minds. Or if we want to do that on Thanksgiving Day or any other day that you choose to memorialize the Lord. We don't have very many specific laws of thou shalt rest and thank God for what he's given you. But we have so many opportunities every day, every week when we come together to celebrate the Lord's Supper. We thank God for what he's done for us through Christ. We still have these moments. But what we're doing is we are looking forward to that ultimate rest. And that's what the Sabbath rest is all about. We're still working through days 1 through 6 here in this life, waiting to put everything down and rest with the Lord. So yeah, we're tired, but we're also excited. And we're celebrating, and we're giving back to God, and we're inviting people over, and we're sharing our bounty, and we're celebrating about what we can put in and put up in the pantry so that we can make it through a hard winter. And when the spring of rebirth arrives, we thank God that we had enough to make it through the hard winter. And that's a way of celebrating what God has given us. Those aren't New Testament commandments, but those are a way that you can interact with the world that is around you. And let your light shine by saying, I am so happy that I have made it through another hard winter. Because there's a lot of people out there who feel bad every winter. And we have the light of God to keep us awake and alive and warm and filled. And we can celebrate in those ways and share that with the world. Sorry that this was a long lesson looking at some pretty tedious details. But I thought it was pretty exciting and hopefully, if you start a Bible reading program coming up in a few weeks, you're going to get tired and stumble when you hit the Old Testament law, and you're going to get into some of these. But maybe this overview in this chapter is going to say, okay, I know about some of these feasts. I know about these, and you can start putting the clues together. Maybe this will encourage you. Or if you want some homework assignments, look up the Day of the Atonement. Look up the Passover. Look at the event of them leaving the land of Egypt. Count the days until they got to Mount Sinai. There's some really neat assignments that you can give yourself to research and understand. What is it that the Israelites lived through? And then find the application for yourself. What is it that I am living through? We live in a world created to be good, but full of trouble. But God is going to take care of us. If you need God's care, like we all do, if you're feeling the hurt, and if you're feeling the pinch, and if you're feeling the strain, particularly from the enslavement of sin, we want to help you with that. God wants to relieve you of that. He wants to forgive you. He wants to remove that guilt and shame from you. If there's anyone who needs help with that, why don't you come forward as we all stand together and sing.